Hi, this is Rachel McElroy.
Ooh, this is Griffin.
There it is.
Ooh, ghost.
And this is Wonder Boo.
Wonder Graveyard Fall. I'm your host, Skeleton Finn. McElroy. And
people are going to think this is a Halloween-themed episode. As far as I know, it is not.
It is not a Halloween-themed episode. It is just the month that we start.
It is October.
Folks, we're fucking in it, man.
Ooh.
What?
My dad's birthday's coming up. Just uh-oh. Remembered.
Good. I'm glad. How did you walk me through how you got there? Was it something about your dad loves mummies?
No, my dad has an early October birthday. And anytime October starts, I have to like have right. that moment where I'm like, oh, we're getting there.
You are getting there. Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, let's, you know, put our heads together. What do you get for the man that has everything?
Yeah.
Don't say blues memorabilia.
He's got it.
He has it. No matter what it is, he has that. Yeah, it's just, you remember last year I did October as one of my segments because we're just like, we're on that holiday creep now.
Yeah.
We're getting into the good stuff, baby. Put
I
all
have
those...
been trying to force fall on Austin for several weeks now.
Yeah.
Has not happened yet.
No, and I've been trying to do my usual stuff, trying to block out the sun. I hired a fleet of blimps mm-hmm. to block out the sun and drop ice cubes on everyone.
You bought all of those leaf blowers and position them at the trees.
I got in trouble with the city for too many leaf blowers, which they didn't. Mm-hmm. Hey, folks, send out a brochure or something. Send out a pamphlet if that's a law now. Okay. I don't see why I have to go to jail for 10 years because I didn't know you
could.
Just
saying, it says in the Constitution
yeah.
that every man should have the right to as many leaf blowers as he wants.
A leaf blower is an arm, if you think about mm-hmm. it, and I have the right to bear it. So mm-hmm. that's all I'm going to say about that. Do you have any small wonders?
I do.
What?
Actually, I have two small wonders.
Oh, shit.
One is John Hodgman's new book.
Oh, yeah.
Medallion Status. I stole it from Griffin, and I have been reading it aggressively. I'm 180 pages in.
Yeah. John sent me an early copy. He was like, I want you to read this. I treasure your opinion on this, Griffin. I was like, tight. And I got it. We were on an airplane. Rachel's like, give me your fucking book. She took it. She fashioned a shiv out of one of those Biscoff cookies, and she said, give me that fucking book right
God,
now.
If only we had flown Delta.
Oh, God.
Don't
what
even
a
joke.
Sweet dream that would have been. What's your second thing?
My second thing is the unaired sketch that I shared with you today.
Yeah.
It's a cut for time sketch.
From SNL.
Yes, starring Bill Hader. I believe it's from at least 4 or 5 years ago. And it's just called Alan. And I noticed it because there was a, and I'm going to say GIF because I'm more comfortable saying that.
Okay.
There was a GIF on Twitter that was circulating of Bill Hader just kind of dancing in this kind of like sly, sarcastic way.
Right.
That people were using to like talk about things that they liked but didn't really like.
Okay.
And I was like, I got to see where that came from. And I watched the whole sketch today and it is incredible.
He's like a dancing robot man. It's a wild sketch.
Yeah, you should check it out. Bill Hader just does a lot of sly dancing. Vanessa Bayer.
It's pronounced Bayer, actually.
She's in it.
And
it's a good sketch.
I
recommend it.
It's Bill Hader does good work in it. It is a sketch. You know what? I'm going to say broccoli.
Ooh.
Yeah, broccoli is a vegetable that I can really get behind. It shows up in a lot of, Asian rice bowl dishes, mm-hmm. and it just soaks up all that good flavor. Hate the stems, love the tops. Good old broccoli tops. Broccoli tops, Tennessee.
There it is.
I like it. There's a lot of good things you can do with it. Roast it. Give it a good char on it. Yeah, baby.
That is a game changer.
I still do some sous vide stuff. We're still doing sous vide around this house, and I'll do up some salmon, or I'll do up a steak or something like that, and just roast some broccoli, throw some mm-hmm. garlic, and maybe a little bit of lemon juice on
Oof.
There. Oof. Oof, that's a treat.
Put some parm on top,
Throw
too.
Some parm on
that's
it.
Another way.
Why not? You've been good. Hey, what's your first big wonder?
Ooh.
Yeah.
My first, appropriately, I didn't even think about this. It does relate slightly to
broccoli?
My small wonder.
Oh.
Mm-mm. Dancing.
Oh.
We hadn't really talked about dancing.
Huh, yeah, this is sort of, because it's such a broad concept, but we have set no
limits.
Limits.
So I, one episode, I brought the fact that I like songs that have associated dances.
Right.
But I never talked about dances separately as a concept.
Okay.
Here's the thing about dancing.
Right.
I have two real, like, deep emotional connections to it. One, I took dance class basically from age 3 to age 17, pretty much regularly, but always in, like, a very, like, low-stakes community center kind of environment.
You weren't on some Black Swan shit when you were 10 years old.
No, never did point. You know, all of my dance classes were a combination of, like, at least two styles of dance every one-and-a-half-hour session.
Right.
Love it. Always loved it. That was my sport. Second is when I knew that I was real into Griffin.
Ooh, do tell.
We've been dating a little over a month, and we went dancing with a bunch of friends at Barbarella.
Oh, Barbarella.
And I saw your moves. And
I laid it down.
I had a real good time with you, and I thought, I think I'm starting to maybe one day potentially fall in love with him.
Yeah. You gave me the bachelor sort of couching. Yeah, we didn't do that often. We didn't go to that place that often, but that was one of the best nights ever. Like, that was such a fun night. Dancing, man. Dancing is fun. You're right.
I'm glad I convinced you.
Well, no, I'm. It's such a broad thing that I was like trying to figure out how it applied to me in my life. And we used to go to a dance club in Huntington like every Friday night for 3 years or so, and had just like the best time ever.
It's always a good time. If you are in a room full of people that are also dancing. Now, I will say, if you have been in a dance environment and there are not other people dancing, it is very
not
challenging.
Great. Yeah.
Also, if you have not had anything to drink, also challenging.
Yeah, for some folks.
But there's a lot of benefits to dancing, and there's a lot that we know about dancing through science.
Okay.
Do you want to hear about it?
I do.
Okay, so first, and the reason this came up to me is you mentioned through your Beat Sabering that you'd been burning a lot of calories.
Got back into it. Damn, it is a sweaty mess in here.
There's a University of Brighton, which is a institution in the UK. Their study says that dancing can expend 300 calories every half hour.
Wow, then I'm slacking off because I'm only getting about 200 out of my Beat Sabering. I guess it's mostly upper body. What kind of dance are you burning 300 calories
in? I think that's when you're really like, you're full on.
That's where crumping came from. Somebody was dancing and they were like, more calories, more calories.
Therapists have also prescribed dancing as therapy for those who suffer from social anxiety or fear of public speaking. The idea is that the more you're comfortable dancing in front of people, likely the more comfortable.
That is so interesting.
You would be speaking or, you know.
I was such an antisocial guy, and then all my friends started going to this dance club, Club Echo in Huntington, and I started going to that, and I started to like, that's where I made like all of my college friends, because I was like, well, as long as I'm not embarrassed about this, that's so interesting.
There's also research to say that dancing can encourage social bonding, because you are in an environment all dancing to the same music, and it helps you feel a connection and sameness with the people that you are with.
Well, especially if you're doing the bump and grind. That's a connection.
I'm not prepared to talk about that.
Yeah.
I don't know how to.
Are you trying to think of the last time? We've never bumped in. We've been together for almost, what, for a long time now.
I'm pretty like sure eight, that's something eight, 9 years. That you give up in your 20s.
Yeah, we don't need to bump and grind anymore.
Dancing also has been shown to positively impact mental health. For adolescent females that took dance classes, they had more positive thoughts and more confidence after dancing. Here, this is interesting. So there are. Researchers have studied what the most appealing way to dance is in both men and women.
What?
This I love this so much. And if you look for this study, so this is a study done by the University of Northumbria. And so if you look for it, you can see little 3D images of the most appealing
dance. Ideal sexual dance?
So in 2017, researchers used 3D motion capture to record 39 dancers. And turn their movements into computer-generated avatars. So these video clips were then watched and rated for dance quality by 57 men and 143 women. Do you want to know what was
the most popular dance? Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah, I guess. I don't know how you put that into words.
The study concluded that there are three types of dancing that contribute to top female moves. Greater hip swing, more asymmetric movement of the thighs.
Asymmetric movement of the thighs?
So like a different, you know, like you're not doing the same thing. You're not doing like the Tootsie Roll or whatever you're like, you're doing.
You are doing the Tootsie Roll sitting down right now. And I've never been more attracted to you.
And finally, intermediate levels of asymmetric movements of the arms.
I couldn't follow it. I didn't follow that.
Do you want me to show it to you?
Yeah.
You can see this animated too if you were to search for it.
Okay, I'll try and describe what Rachel's doing. So she's scooting back in her office chair. Are you going to stand up? Oh, damn. Okay, let's see. So you're, oh, right. Okay, so she's doing the thing where she kind of puts one hand up and she's just kind of swaying to the music and the one hand is just like doing a queen's wave. That was hot.
Yeah, well, yeah. Thank you. Do you want to know what it
is? Yeah, what do I need to be doing?
Okay, so this...
Number one, skanking it to some ska punk.
Now, I haven't seen videos of the men movement because this was done back in 2014 when I'm guessing 3D motion capture was not as advanced.
Right, and our science was a little bit more gender normative than it is in 2019.
So yeah, so this study was judged only by women and they discovered that, quote, large variable movements of the head, neck, and torso.
Oh my God.
Made a man more attractive.
It's fucking dancing. Like you've just described all dance.
Wait, as well as bending and twisting of the right knee. Don't get that left knee out there. Nobody wants it. Just the right.
Okay, now you describe. Is there more?
No.
Okay, I'm going to try and do this.
Okay, so let me say it again. Large variable movements of the head, neck, and torso, as well as bending and twisting of the right knee.
Describe it.
Griffin looks like he has a rock in his shoe. And also he's using his arms as if he were holding ski poles.
Yeah. Ow, fuck.
There's a lot of wiggling too.
Ow. I've made a terrible mess of things.
So yeah, I would encourage if you're curious to see what this dance looks like yourself, you can search. Again, this is the University of Northumbria. This is a 2017 study. Video clips of 39 women's dance styles rated for dance quality.
Catch it. Do you want to know my first thing?
Yes.
I'm a little exhausted. My first thing is what I am calling the holy triumvirate of hotel TV. When I travel quite a bit these days, folks, and...
Oh, I'm always curious what you watch because I know what I watch.
Right. And I think the answer is the same for every single person in our age bracket. I'm not even necessarily... When I talk about these television networks, I'm not even talking about like, I love the programming or... you know, I actually watch the programming on a day-to-day non-hotel basis. I'm talking about when I'm scanning through the hotel TV, there's three channels that never let me down. It's HGTV, Food Network, and Travel Channel.
Yes, yes, yes.
Travel Channel's on the bubble. Food Network and HGTV mostly.
Yeah, for sure. You know what I think it is? I think it's because the shows are basically the same. So if you like right. one show, you more than likely will like other ones. And they just rotate different people
like
out.
Like being the... key word there. I think that this triumvirate of TV networks is like the TV equivalent of like, I'll stick with water for now. Thanks.
that's a good allusion or comparison.
Yeah. When I have time to spare and I'm in a hotel environment, it's late and I just got comfy and I want to watch some TV. Like I feel slightly unmoored because we have like cable at our house, but we never, ever, ever watch it live.
No, we got it mainly for the DVR. And so we never just like turn it on.
Right. It's all on demand. So now I'm faced with a million strange channels with programming. I don't know. Schedules. I don't know.
Yes.
Channel numbers. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And I'm a very anxious person. And so when I have this free time at a hotel where I'm not like prepping for a show or... you know, about to run out to make a call time or anything like that, like I start to get a little panicked that I'm not going to spend that time well. I'm not going to spend that free, relaxing time efficiently.
You got to get in that bathtub, baby. That's what I do.
Maybe, yeah.
Really, just pretend like you don't have a bathtub at home.
Well, I have, can I tell you this? I have a schedule that I like swear to. Okay. It is gospel to me.
Okay.
And it is that, and it makes me fresh for every show. I'll have lunch And then our call time is usually 4:30, and I will lunch, nap, shower, and head right out the door. Like, out of the shower, right out the door. And I feel so fresh the whole night. I save my shower time until right before I'm about to go to the show. So I can't take a bath earlier. Anyway, if I'm flipping around, I'm going through an ocean of ESPNs and C-SPANs and a bunch of garbage, I don't know. And then as soon as I hit Food Network or HGTV or Travel, they're usually right next to each other in the little home economics block.
Yeah.
I love that shit. And it's going to have something on it. I don't really like Chopped all that much, but I'll watch every episode of Chopped that you got on your shelf. Uh-huh. I'll watch a Halloween, you know, cupcake baking tournament for children. Like,
we did when we went to Disney. Every night after Henry would go to bed, we would kind of find our way to Chopped, it seemed like.
Find our way to Chopped, and then Chopped would turn into Good Eats. I'll fuck with Good Eats. Yeah, why not? Diners, Drive-Ins, and Dives, the shines come off that particular apple for Rachel, but I still am down to clown with Guy Fieri and all his things. I'll even go with him on Guy's Grocery Games. I don't give a shit. Fucking House Hunters.
There's a fine line, though, where the formula turns on you, right?
Okay.
Like, it's definitely comforting. But if I watch enough of it, I start to resent the formula. I start to like resent the way each episode follows the same pattern. And then I've gotta move on.
You're talking about the Triple D right now?
I'm talking about all those shows, all those like Food Network and HGTV shows. It's just like, you know, you kind of know how it's going to work. And that's comforting at first. And then it starts to feel real stifling.
That's the thing. It's just for a little bit. It's just for a little bit. And then, you know, I'm out of the hotel. I'm doing my own. I'm doing some more shit. And when I come home, I don't watch these channels. I can't stress that enough. When I'm at home, I never watch these channels ever. It's just my little hotel snack. I turn it on. There's Chopped. There's like, you got this brisket, this chocolate cake, these pickled yams, and my own fingernails. Turn it into a picnic lunch.
We tried to watch a little bit of Shark Tank at Disney, and I got real angry about that too, if I remember correctly.
Well, it wasn't on the triumvirate, was it?
It's fair.
I don't know. As I'm an older gentleman and my leisure time is more limited, I like knowing that when I'm in a strange place, I have this weird little security blanket and I can turn it on. And
you also don't, like, there's no linear story from episode to episode. So unlike if you're scrolling past like a TNT or a USA, you don't have to worry about I'm not familiar with this plot line.
Or even if I am familiar with it, it's highly unlikely that I've tuned into the exact episode that I was needed to watch. What am I going to do? Watch an episode I've already seen or skip a few episodes? No, I will watch somebody make a picnic lunch out of a Rice Krispie treat
and a spider.
I have a theory. Okay. I didn't look up any science on this because that'd be fucking wild. But I have a theory about why I find these so comforting and why these were the channels you were thinking of when I was talking about hotel comfort food, right?
Yeah.
I think it's because of Laszlo's pyramid of desire.
Hierarchy of needs.
Laszlo's pyramid of desire, please, was the original working title of it. Where we just want some food and some shelter and some water parks. We need that to survive. And here are these three channels here to show it to us.
Okay. And then you just stop going up the pyramid at a certain point.
You stop because you got tired. It's a pyramid, folks. Pyramid climbing's not on the pyramid. So whatever, man. Hey, can I steal you away?
Yes. Can I read a personal message for you?
Only if it's for Tim.
It is for Tim.
Then you may proceed.
It's from Liz. And the message is, what I think is wonderful is you. Swiping right on the cute, shy nerd who liked podcasts was the best decision I've ever made. I'm still in awe that I get to be yours, and I'm so thankful for our little family. Here's to a future full of packed lunches, pep talks, big beds, Gerbert voices, and learning to love ourselves and each other better every day.
That's so sweet.
That's very sweet.
It's also a pretty tricky needle to thread, I think, to present yourself as a shy nerd who likes podcasts and get that good, good right swipe on the Tinder is the one that swipes.
I think so. Yeah. I mean, more might swipe now. Who knows? You know what this made me want, though, is for you to pack me lunches.
Oh, shit. Okay. What do you like? I can make a ham one, sandwich. Do you like wheat thins? I'll throw some wheat thins in there.
Why are you naming things we don't actually have in the house right now?
We have old wheat thins.
We do have old wheat thins.
We have really old wheat thins. Folks, you would not believe the age of these wheat thins.
They could drive themselves to work.
They could. They are responsible drinkers, these Wheat Thins. I have another message here from Mom, and it's from Parker, who says, "Hi, Mom. It's Parker. I just wanted to say through your favorite podcast that I love you so incredibly much and that I'm sorry for always making you late. I promise I'm working on it. You mean the world to me, and thanks for being the best parent ever and supporting me through my transition. I love you so much." Now, that's a good mom.
That's a real good mom.
That's a slam dunk mom.
Hear all the time that a lot of folks can share this podcast with their parent, and that's real
nice.
That
is sweet. Yeah, it's so sweet. And it makes me think that there's some, you know, hip parents out there that know all the cool teen lingo.
Yeah, that's definitely what it is.
Like us.
Macho man to the top rope. The flying elbow, the cover. We've got a new champion!
We're here with Macho Man Randy Savage after his big win to become the new world champion. What are you going to do now, Match?
I'm going to go listen to the newest episode of the Tights and Fights podcast, oh yeah!
Tell us more about this podcast.
It's the podcast of power, too sweet to be sour, funky like a monkey, woke discussions, man, and jokes about wrestlers' fashion choices, myself excluded, yeah.
I can't wait to listen.
Neither can I. You can find it Thursdays on Maximum Fun. Oh, yeah, dig it.
Do you want to know my second thing?
More than anything.
Googly eyes. Is that your second thing?
No, I'm...
Are you anti-googly eye?
I'm a little bit over it.
Oh, no, Griffin. What happened? Who hurt you?
The googly man.
You know there is actually a googly man?
I know there is. He hurt me.
I love googly eyes, and here's why. So I like personifying inanimate objects.
Right.
It's just something I've always been big on. You remember when I brought that like Faces Twitter account?
Right, sure.
Mm-hmm. The googly eye makes this so possible for anybody. You just go to a craft store, you get those like adhesive googly eyes, you stick them on a stapler. Oh, and now it's your friend's stapler and you're not alone.
All right. So there's a more layers to this, it seems like.
What I used to do, so when in my younger days, when I was a little bit of a prankster, at the job I worked at, I would spread googly eyes all over the building and in my friends' little cubicles, and I'd put them on their phones and on their computer mouse. And it was just like a fun little like, hey, I'm brightening your day kind of gesture. And I still enjoy it. To this day, I don't practice as much as I used to, but I still see the value in it, and I support others that do.
Yeah, I support you. This was, I will say this happened a lot on the Joko cruise that we went on, yeah. Which, by the way, hey, just announced we're going on the...
We're doing it again.
We're doing it again in 2020, and we're very much looking forward to it. But yeah, there were googly eyes all over, and that was fun. There was a lot of fun treasure hunting on the boat. But one time our friends put googly eyes on like an old thing of syrup that I had in our spice like drawer that was there for like a year. Uh-huh. And as we were like packing up to move out, I saw it with the googly eyes and I felt betrayed. Like, how long have you been there? These googly eyes have been here for so long and they knew they were here and I didn't. And that makes me... Seem like
I think
a
that's
real...
when the plants stayed at our house when we were in Japan
so
for
the
a honeymoon.
Freaking culprits.
So this is like over a year later.
The prestige.
Here's the history of googly eyes, and okay. I'm not 100% on this, but this is what I found. There was an artist named Billy DeBeck, and he created a comic that he called Barney Google and Snuffy Smith. And his characters had these big eyes, and he decided to create a craft product to make it a way of further promoting the comic strip. So the culmination of the work came in 1923 when he developed a song for Barney Google, which you can find online. And it's called Barney Google with your goo goo gluey eyes.
Drips right off the tongue.
Goo goo googly.
I have like five questions.
Mm-hmm.
Did Google
1923, by the way.
Okay, so Google just fully stole the name then from Barney Google. Just like fully took it.
I mean, possibly.
I always thought googly eyes was a descriptor of the craft product and not a name.
Yeah, but think about where would the word googly, like, that's not an intuitive word for describing eyes.
These particular eyes, I think. If you looked at these eyes and Barney Google never, you know,
what else do you describe in your life as googly?
I mean, my favorite search engine, Google.
I couldn't find any certainty with this, but it's kind of the earliest known listing of googly as a word. And so it seemed only natural that the googly eyes
would
come from these cartoon characters with the big eyes. Here's another thing I found. Googly eyes took like a global phenomenon when the Googly Eyes Foundation formed. And I think this may be extinct now because I haven't found a lot of activity since 2017. But they would take donations and then fund projects all over the world to place googly eyes in public spaces.
Oh, okay. I thought it was going to be something, you know, good for mankind or whatever.
No,
okay. So
no, we're not curing anything here.
Okay, good. Boredom.
So people used to be able to go on this website and just request a packet of googly eyes to do, like, you know, street art all over the place.
Vandalism.
There were artists in Bulgaria that were taking advantage of this as members of the Googly Eye Foundation. And so they would find oddly shaped trees and cracks in the sidewalk and they would put googly eyes on it.
I like that, actually.
Yeah. And so this is what I really appreciated. So they called this eye bombing.
That sounds out of context. That sounds awful.
It does sound awful. But there is an Instagram account, so you can still see some of this early work from the Googly Eyes Foundation. This is like an example. You know when people would put those little like yarn crocheted things around lampposts? I like this kind of like out in the wild art, you know, that's just kind of like there's no purpose for it. It's just nice. It just kind of brightens your day. See a googly eye on a fire hydrant and you just think, well, that's a funny little guy.
What's your name, little mister?
Yeah, it's nice.
You full of water pressure? You guys help fight a fire later? Look at you. Oh, I bet you've seen a doggy or two, huh?
Also, those of you that haven't seen the Christopher Walken sketch called The Googly Eyes Gardener, he puts a bunch of googly eyes on cactuses. It's
quite good.
Great.
Yes.
It's pretty great.
And of course, Stick Stickly repping those googly eyes.
Yeah. And to an extent, Cookie Monster.
Some
googly eyes.
Still don't know how those work. How does the pupil move around the sphere?
No one knows.
It's like a non-Euclidean object that they've whipped up there on the street.
Can I hear your second thing?
My second thing's a movie. I never do these, but I was reading about like a 20-year anniversary of this movie, and it just reminded me, like, hey, I really like this movie. The movie is The Truman Show. This movie beats ass.
Oh.
It's just a good as heck movie.
It is good.
I remember the first time I saw it, I walked away like thinking, like, wow, that's a good movie. And also, that was The Man Who Makes His Butt Talk in the Ace Venturas. And he didn't really go quite as hard in this one. I feel like that's where he started to twist it a little bit. That's like right before Jim Carrey did Man on the Moon. And like he was like, I can be a serious actor. It's not all butt talking, folks. But The Truman Show is a good movie. And reading about this, Vanity Fair did like a 20-year postmortem. It came out in 1998. So this article came out last year and like interviewed everybody who was in it. And when I mean everybody who's in it, I'm talking about fucking Laura Linney crushing it. Ed Harris crushing it. Jim Carrey and Ed Harris won Golden Globes for their roles. And I think Ed Harris was nominated for an Oscar for Best Supporting Actor. The movie had 3 Oscar nominations. I didn't realize it was, like, you know, critically well received in its time. I always thought it was just kind of a weird dramedy with Jim Carrey in it when it came out. But you and I recently rewatched it, right? Like, didn't we rewatch it like last year or something like that?
It seems possible, although I don't know why we would have.
It showed up on Stars or something like that. And we were like, hey,
yeah,
let's just watch The Truman Show and see what happens. And it holds up. So there are an infinite number of lenses through which to like look at this movie as being like profoundly prophetic for the future that we live in now. And we'll talk about that. But like, I just think it's a good movie, even without all of the commentary on reality television culture that it like predated just barely.
Yeah.
It's, if you've never seen it, Jim Carrey plays a guy named Truman Burbank, and he's just an average dude. He lives in a town called Sea Haven Island. But that town is actually like a high tech film set where everybody inside it is an actor, and it's just this big dome, and the ceiling is a screen that projects the sky. And there's, you know, thousands of hidden cameras everywhere, and everybody just watches this this person who was adopted by this corporation when he was a baby grow up without knowing he's in a TV show.
Yeah.
That was unnecessary. Everybody knows what the Truman Show is about, right?
Maybe not.
Well, because it's become sort of a part of the consciousness, like somebody saying there is a psychological condition called like the like Truman Show,
yes,
condition. And it's a super, super rare thing that is like real and, you know, obviously kind of horrific, where people actually believe that this is true. But obviously in the movie, it is a light sci-fi romp.
Exactly. That's my favorite kind of sci-fi, is those light romps.
When I was writing about this, I realized like this movie and Groundhog Day actually have a lot in common.
Yeah,
like I like a gentle sci-fi morality play, which, yes, is kind of what the both, yes, of these are.
Let me tell you about a show called Quantum Leap.
Yeah, that's fair. So yeah, you just like get to see how this like TV show works and go behind the scenes, and then you start to see Truman figure it out, and then the movie starts to take on kind of a madcap tone. I didn't know this. Robin Williams was originally slated to play Truman Burbank, which would have been great too.
Yeah.
But the director, who was Peter Weir, he saw Ace Ventura and saw Jim Carrey and thought he had like some Charlie Chaplin energy.
Yeah,
and
I can see that.
And so he put him in the movie. And I think that like that's a great choice, because as he starts to realize what's going on, he has this full blown like slapstick collapse as he like tests the limits of this,
yeah,
fictional world.
Well,
that is,
and
so
if you
great
think about it, like the casting for that is kind of great, because like as you mentioned, people kind of knew Jim Carrey as this like entertainer who really just existed to make people laugh,
right?
And so to put him in this role is kind of like a nice transition of like, here's this character who's existing for other people, and
right,
we get to like see who he really is.
Shit, this must have been right before Eternal Sunshine also, which, man.
Oh, I think it was several years before Eternal Sunshine. I think it was maybe like,
I'm trying to remember. I saw Eternal Sunshine when I was like in high school. Yeah, this would have been several years, mm-hmm, before Eternal Sunshine. Man, that's a good movie. Mm-hmm. Damn, we need to do a Michel Gondry deep dive on this,
yeah,
one.
I don't know if those hold up though. I'm hesitant.
They're on like every streaming service. Let's dip in. I'm
okay.
Curious.
Okay.
I'm curious. So like in this Vanity Fair piece, basically everybody is reflecting on this movie came out a year before Big Brother debuted on TV.
Yeah, they had to have like picked that up a little bit from this movie.
But like it is, it predated just barely like reality TV. It obviously predated by a you know, a decade or so the idea of social media.
Yeah.
And so in this Vanity Fair piece, they're all reflecting on like how wild it is that they made this movie about running away from cameras that are documenting your life, which is the opposite of kind of the norm today.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't want to go all Banksy, like everybody's just obsessed with their phones. Everybody's so obsessed with themselves and looking at your phones. You should look up at the trees, folks. Look at the face of your loved ones.
Mm-hmm.
Because I don't think necessarily the movie was saying that either. Back when it came out, like all we had to talk about, like in this sort of vein, was paparazzis and obsession with stardom and stuff
well,
like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, and also it just spoke to something really fundamental about like having these relationships with people, and you just realize that you have like a fundamental misunderstanding of what your connection with them is.
Yeah.
Like when I saw this as like a teen, it just reminded me of like having a lot of these teenage friendships where all of a sudden you look and realize like, oh, they're not on my side at all.
Right.
Like we were never the friends I thought we were. So there's something about this movie, like even though it was like a kind of a science fiction-y premise, it was like, oh yeah, I get that.
But it also like cast the people who are making this show as these like, you know, Machiavellian,
yeah,
like power obsessed monsters. And also like really makes a big deal out of how like fake and bullshit this world is. I love when we rewatched it, which I remember we definitely did, the amount of product placement that is in the movie and the way that it is so like they actually don't make a huge deal out of it, except when it's like made as a joke. But like in every single shot, there is something there is some sort of product placement around it. Like it is portrayed as not necessarily like the best thing. It is kind of portrayed as like kind of a terrible fate that has befallen Truman Burbank. And it, again, like just barely preceded like this influx of all reality television, which obviously we are not above. We cut our teeth on that shit with this podcast. But it is weird how very close to that genre of television becoming like the biggest genre in television this movie was. Like, it's like if Nostradamus was like, yo, next year, check it out. We're going to invent the horse-drawn carriage or whatever. It's not necessarily the
really
best example.
I thought you were going to call like the next big piece of technology right here on our very little podcast.
No, I was trying to think of what like Nostradamus would have been, but then I realized that I have no fucking idea when that dude was alive and really don't really know who he is, especially I don't know who he is. I don't know much about anything. Anyway, I like the movie a lot.
Me too.
And I think that it's a fun watch. Mm-hmm. And what I like about it is how conflicted I get when I watch it, because like the whole back half of the movie is Jim Carrey's character trying to like escape this fake world and trying to like get out of it, and
seeing the producers kind of try and identify ways to keep him in it.
Right. And seeing, but like when I watch it, I'm conflicted because I'm like, but this is such a neat concept, and I don't want you to like, if you leave, then the TV show ends, which is like exactly what everybody watching the TV show inside of the movie is doing. And so you feel like super guilty about it.
It's really well done.
It's a really good movie, y'all. And also it almost killed Jim Carrey. I didn't know this when I was researching it. At the very end, like he's trying to escape, and he is on a boat that capsizes in the ocean.
Oh.
And there was like a hand signal that Jim Carrey was supposed to, he's like wearing a wool sweater and like clothes and stuff like that. And so he went under when the boat capsized, and there were divers, safety divers down there, and they just didn't see his hand signal, his like distress signal. And so like he hit the bottom of the tank and like just barely pushed himself out and almost drowned.
Oh my God.
And he was upset about it. Apparently there was some friction, again, much like Groundhog Day, there was some friction between Jim Carrey and Peter Weir throughout this movie, because Jim Carrey again had rewrite power just like Bill Murray did on Groundhog Day. Wow, there's so many similarities.
Wow, Griffin, looks like you have to go to graduate school.
Oh no.
Write a whole thesis.
I don't want to go to graduate school, baby. Do
I'm sorry,
have to?
You have to.
Oh man. Anyway, Truman Show. Good one. Good flick.
Mm-hmm.
Good flick. I like that.
What do our friends
Glad
at home
he didn't
like?
Die. If he had died, we wouldn't have gotten Dumb and Dumber 2. That's something, that one's so funny.
Better
than the original, I think. Michael says, I love a good sandwich that comes with a dip or a sauce on the side. You get the exact amount of sauce you want with each bite and no soggy bread. Yeah. French dip.
You know, I have never done a French dip.
You're kidding me.
I don't really know how it works. What is the sandwich and what are you dipping it in?
It's usually roast beef and
what do you dip it in?
Some horseradish mostly, maybe, and some like a provolone maybe melted on there. And then you dip it in au jus. Au jus.
Okay.
What is au jus?
The juice.
I don't know. It's the juice, I guess. It's the good. That's French for the good juice.
Mm-hmm.
Emma says, something I find wonderful is trolley tours. I love being able to ride around a city and learn a little bit about its history while also enjoying a breeze, because the windows on the trolley are so wide and open, you feel refreshed and just a little more knowledgeable about once the tours are done. Never been on a trolley tour. I've never been on a bus tour, I don't think.
You know what? We did ride the trolley in New Orleans, if I remember, and we were just packed in there.
That was a survival.
We were just packed in there so tight.
Yeah, it was brutal. That was really, we were there during Mardi Gras. We went like way out to the World War II Museum, and there were no like cabs, or this was pre-Lyft and Uber. And so we had to pack into one little trolley. It was not breezy or educational. But this sounds great. Meg says, my small wonder this week is when airplane pilots point out landmarks to the passengers as the plane passes over them. Something about seeing places like the Grand Canyon or Yosemite from the air is pretty magical. I also love the sudden sense of camaraderie that brings the airplane cabin as everyone peers out the window and points it out to one another. I've never, ever, ever had this happen. Me neither. Not once, never.
Me neither. But it's possible we just don't fly in areas where this would be happening as much.
Possibly. I mean, every time I fly to LA, I like looking out the window at the mountains, you know, the mountains as we fly over them.
But what's the pilot going to do? Just be like, hey,
there's some badass mountains outside,
folks. Cool mountains, guys.
I think I see a goat and a bear. Oh, cool.
It's also possible this has happened and we were not paying attention.
Entirely possible, yes. Anyway, that's it. Thank you to Bowen and Augustus for these for our theme song, Money Won't Pay. You can find a link to that in the episode description. And Maximum Fun, thanks for having us on the network.
Yeah, thank you, Maximum Fun, for hosting our show and lots of other great shows. I would recommend, if you have not checked it out yet, and you like films like The Truman Show, but even worse, and significantly worse, The Flophouse.
Yeah, maybe they did. What's the movie he did like last year that was like a so terrible dark crime? I think it was called Dark Crimes. I was going to say it's a dark crime thriller that was apparently abysmal and he was in it. I think it was called Dark Crimes. I bet they've done that one. Anyway, that's a bad movie. And the number 23. Wow. Okay. Actually, he was in a lot of bad movies, but that's okay because he did Truman Show. I think that's probably it, right? Go to macroy.family. We got some new merch. We're working on some wonderful merch now. Hopefully going to have that up next month, I promise. And I mean, what else can you say?
Should I
take him out with one of my dances? I think I've been thinking about it in my head, what it's supposed to look like. So maybe we could do it again and you can
describe it. You want me to describe it?
Yeah.
Okay. Griffin is standing. He's moving both legs, favoring the right one, though. Oh, he's just rolled up his right pant leg and is really wiggling that knee back and forth. I need to see some head and neck movement. He looks like he's going down a a ski jump. He's got his arms behind him. His head's very low.
What's up?
He's very close to me.
You come here, huh? Let me buy you a drink. What's up? You come here with your friends?
This is how we fell in love.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture. Artist owned.
Listener supported.
The Greatest Generation is a Star Trek podcast that destigmatizes the very idea of having a Star Trek podcast.
We're Ben and Adam, the hosts of The Greatest Generation, and the technology we've developed is that nobody knows what you're playing in your earbuds.
You know, with legalization, it's easier than ever to find out what's in your buds. But we suggest that you legally find The Greatest Generation wherever you download your podcasts.
We'll send it to you in a discreet, unmarked package, and nobody has to know but us.
That's The Greatest Generation, the Star Trek podcast that you didn't know you needed, yet makes you feel like you belong.